You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development and the United Nations Non-Governmental Liaison Service.
So Jérôme is going to give us a kind of overview of the state of the art of research and practice in this area. So without further ado, the floor is yours. And just to say, you're of course free to speak in your native language, as we have French interpretation.
Merci, merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much. I will be speaking in French this time, but the PowerPoint presentation slides will be in English. So, first of all, I would like to thank the speaker for this very kind introduction. In such a setting as this, it's very important to have this conference on social and solidarity economies, especially in an English setting, and especially this afternoon's session on complementary social currencies, CCs, to take up the terms that we have in English, community and complementary. Very briefly, to kick off this afternoon's session, just to start, there's a very brief overview on what we'll be looking at this afternoon. What exactly is the meaning of this session? This afternoon's special session reflects, first of all, that there's been quite a bit of work done on complementary currencies, these CCs, and without which it wouldn't have been possible to hold a session like the one we're holding this afternoon. And this is why we couldn't have brought together such an outstanding set of papers as we have. And the second significant element about which we could discuss, however, is that this afternoon's session is part of a broader framework, the International Conference on Solidarity and Social Economies. And this underscores the proximity effect of these currencies from various perspectives, sometimes in statutes, in principles, objectives, values, goals, plans for action. And this proximity is illustrated by the fact that on a regular basis for several years in academic fora on solidarity and social economies, various papers are delivered on complementary currencies. Now, the third dimension, which I can see in this afternoon session, it's on the fringe. We have an afternoon session dealing with complementary currencies on the fringe of the conference per se on social and solidarity economies. So I feel that this point is very noteworthy, and there's something that's very noteworthy for complementary currencies in the future. You're on the fringe, even though there might be a whole afternoon session devoted to this topic. Now, I'm going to divide my presentation into two parts. The first section will be dealing with the existence, the structure of these complementary currencies. This will be a very broad overview from a quantitative perspective, and then I'll be focusing on research in the second half of my presentation. First of all, with regard to a general perspective on the status and developments concerning CCs, I will be laying out, showing you a chart, a graph that shows the number of existing systems you can see today. You can see this clearly here on the chart, the number of systems over time. And this shows you exactly how many CC systems have been created throughout the world since 1983. I won't be able to go into the methodology. I know that you have to be careful with figures, the figures underlying these two axes, but this does give some insight into developments in this field, specifically concerning the CC schemes. This curve reflects the developments from a conservative perspective, it probably underestimates the number of CC schemes worldwide. As you can see, there was a peak in about 2001-2002, which corresponds to the events which have been discussed, for instance, like by Georgina Gomez, with regard to Argentina specifically back at that time. Now, I'm just quite simply what we can see today. There are 4,000 to 5,000 CC schemes throughout the world in all the different categories, and this is less than 10 years ago. If we accept, apart from the case of Argentina, there has been a gradual rise in the number of CC schemes throughout the world. To fine-tune, so to speak, this quantitative perspective, I'd like to differentiate 4 major generations of CC schemes which have emerged and developed since the 1980s. Now, in this framework, this slide shows you the 4 generations, G1, G2, G3, G4. The first one corresponds to the Letz, the Tauschling in the German-speaking world, and the Trueque system in Argentina, and so forth. These are non-convertible currencies, and they do not entail a great many economic partnerships, but they're often very distrustful of public administrations, of political authorities, and so on. This is what was the first to emerge, along with a great wave of CCs, which started back in 1983-84, around there. The second generation, G2, took off a bit later. It was based on the time banks, time-based systems. These are non-convertible time-based currencies based on the amount of time provided. This is the service that's delivered. And this G2, this second generation, contrary to the first, is deeply rooted in socioeconomic partnerships with local authorities, communities, and this can be mainstreamed into a social policy. So this is quite different from the first generation. There's a different configuration with the time bank and the time-based currencies in the French-speaking world and elsewhere. The third generation, G3, this started in about 1990. There was the Ithaca Hour. These are currencies that are convertible and often, or in all cases, they're paper-based schemes. And in these arrangements, there's a strong underlying goal, local economic development, and the key to this is the development of socioeconomic or economic partnerships, which are quite significant. Economic actors on the territory are really included, they're factored into the equation. Then a fourth generation, G4, emerged at the end of the 1990s, and it's still more or less marginal. These are multiplex projects, complex projects. They entail various objectives. One example of a simultaneous objective in France is the SOL project. There are other ones, relatively complex in terms of conception. There was the NEW project in Amsterdam and then MACI in Amsterdam today. And these projects are very costly. I don't have time to really develop this point at length. They cost a great deal, but the cost very, very different, very much with these 4 different generations from the Letz. At the beginning, the subscribers paid a very modest fee, and it's a little bit more difficult to set up a time bank and to make sure that you have a significant social impact at a low cost. For instance, the Ecuador in France presupposes funding of several ten thousand euros. Then for the G3, I don't really have the figures. I'm sorry, they're in euros, not Swiss francs, but it would be several thousand euros. And you need an initial, for a third generation, G3, you'd need several thousand euros to get going. Now, the G4, the fourth generation, these can sometimes even run into the hundreds of thousands of euros, and the configuration is quite different. Of course, these four generations don't reflect all of the existing CC schemes that have been around for the last 30 years or so. There are other cases that are not covered by these G4 scheme, but I just wanted to give you something that will help us raise some of the important questions that we should be raising. Does this fit into the same kind of logic? Is this a profit-making logic behind the establishment of a currency? Is in their configuration, are we talking, we have to be certain about these points. Are these monies, these currencies, as created by citizens or associations? And finally, is there some kind of a dissemination effect? If we speak of generations, how is this disseminated? And once we've asked these four, we've looked at these four generations, now I'm going to come back to the previous chart. It's the same, but it's broken down into different layers which reflect the different generations, the G1, 2, 3, and 4. The peak is obviously the Argentine crisis in 2000-2001, and we can see that the G1 schemes, apart from the case of Argentina, which is a special case, have the number of these systems has continued to rise. Today, they continue to be the most developed. They have the greatest number of systems. The G1, the G2, the time banks and time-based currencies are not quite as widespread today, but they are continuing to develop. And then the G3 and G4, the third and fourth generations, we can see a little thin strip that's superimposed, and there is still a relatively limited number of G3 and G4 schemes today, but this is a different concept, and of course the startup cost, the implementation cost, can be much, much greater with the G3 and G4 schemes, and there are also constraints in the number of users, for example. Now, after we have sketched in these elements, we can further refine the questions and see over a 10-year period what kind of how many users there are for these different systems. Here you see a graph. 2003 is the base of 100, and you can see how each of these four generations has evolved. And as you can see, there, for instance, first generation LEDs, Trueque in Argentina, and so forth, they have more or less stagnated, one could say. On the other hand, the time-based, the G2 systems, have grown considerably because their number has more than doubled over the past 10 years. But what we can see, what has grown the most and what is the most significant is the G3, the third generation, where there was a sixfold increase in 10 years. And the G4 system, there's a very limited number today. There is a strong growth in terms of the number of systems, but it's not as significant for the time being. This was just to sketch in the broad lines from a quantitative perspective, quite generally with regard to these CC schemes. Now, I'd like to look at how research has evolved, how it's played out over the years, just in a few minutes, to give you some insights into the present state of research into this topic. To sum up, I took data that was available in a review that some of you are familiar with, which is IGSEA, International Journal of Convertible Currency Research, which the first issue of which was brought out in 1990, came out in 1997, and has been published on a continuous basis ever since. And the number of articles has varied considerably over the years. And I looked at the 96 text papers that have been published since 1997. If you remove the editorials and the summary accounts of meetings, I wanted to see what there was behind this. And this was my starting point. This could be criticized because this publication is an essentially English-speaking publication. Out of the 96 texts, there were only two that were not in English originals over the 16-year period covered. So I went up to 2012, not 2003, as it says on the screen, 1997 to 2012. So the literature published is essentially English-speaking literature. And this distorts the insight into research on complementary currencies because the dynamics throughout the world, for instance, in the Spanish-speaking world, in the broad sense of the world, or the French-speaking world, the Spanish-speaking world, these are very important dynamics that are playing out. That having been said, if we look at the development in terms of the number of texts published in the review since 1997, we can see that there's been phenomenal growth in recent years. And this has been the case over several years, where the number of texts published was not that high. And the real explosion in 2011-2012 was linked to research programs for 2011 and to 2012 to a publication that came was the outcome of a forum that was held in 2011. So this reflects this explosion in the number of texts published. This illustrates the present trends, dynamic trends in DSearch at the international level. At the bottom, the base of the chart, there were some key elements of events in Europe. The social and complementary currencies throughout these years. This, of course, is not an exhaustive list. If we look at this a little bit more closely, if we look at what has been published in the IGCCR, we can find the pie chart, which is called the Camembert in French, and the left-hand pie chart, which takes up what the countries have been doing, the countries that were studied in this review. And then we can see that 44% of these schemes were introduced in English-speaking countries. The UK, and then Oceania as well. But we can also see a relatively significant number of texts that have to do with experiments implemented in Latin countries, for instance, Spanish-speaking or Portuguese-speaking countries in Latin America, and also German-speaking countries as well. And Japan was a separate case, but it was also covered by a significant article in the text. And the other slice in the pie chart on the right-hand side, this has to do with the different, it was a breakdown by generation of scheme, and doesn't really come as much of a surprise to see that the G1, that a lot of texts were written about the G1 schemes. In the first few years of the review, these texts mainly had to do with the LETs. They mainly covered the LETs, and then the G2 papers, when this started to be studied, this was a few years later, probably around 2001 for the time banks, and then the G3 schemes with Ithaca and some of the others, these started to be studied from 2003 onwards. So in the review, we have research work, which is an accumulated whole. This focuses very strongly on the LETs and to a lesser extent on the time banks. So, also in relation to the research work published in this magazine, I'm sorry I've gone a little bit over time, what we can see is that there are a great many texts that are empirical in nature, that take different shapes. These can be relatively specific case studies or more general views of the situation in certain countries, but very few theoretical papers. And this is a very significant point that I'd like to make here. We have a lot of research, accumulated research, that tells us what CCs are, but very little research work that tries to really see in general terms, tries to construct theory, to work on theories. The review has something quite significant, which is a combination of publications by researchers and publications by actors as well. And these can also be put together. This is a configuration that is quite interesting. We can see this to a certain extent in works dealing with SSCs. Now, with regard to the subjects taken up, the topics tackled, this is by order of importance. We see research that's focusing on questions relating to community development, social development, empowerment, social capital as well. They're trying to see how you could deal with certain topics, then also gender-related issues. These are the main topics that are tackled in the papers published in this review. There are other issues, such as the evaluation of certain CC schemes, sometimes, rarely, the impact that these schemes might have. And thirdly, you have research on internal governance of systems where you have various organizational options, various choices that you could have when it comes to implementing these CC schemes, and then a fourth set of issues, which has become relatively less important in recent years, on the sociology of the members. Who exactly are the members in these CC schemes? Who are the users of these currencies? What are they looking for? And this brings us back to questions relating to militantism, to the political or ideological underpinnings for the participation in such systems. Then there are issues relating to the relationships with the law, the authorities, and so on. I won't go into all of the topics. Some, with regard to local economic development, there's more and more research work being done. This has become increasingly important, especially with regard to G3 CC schemes. And finally, also in this context, a number of research work that gives a more or less general overview of CCs in various zones and countries. To sum up, I have the feeling that there are a few blind spots and a few shortcomings in the research work done to date on CCs. First of all, the background is not really covered very, the history is not covered closely. We can draw lessons from our failures, because then we can avoid making some of the same mistakes again. But the background is not very present. Theory is not very present as well, and that's also a shortcoming. Comparative approaches between countries, between different systems, between different generations of CC schemes, between societies, and so forth, this is not very present. And lastly, there's not much work interested in how these systems are linked to the monetary system in which we act. In conclusion, with regard to these various elements, I think that in order to really bring this whole question out of the closet, the question of the CCs, I think that there's a need to move along two complementary avenues. First of all, we have to resituate all of these experiments, these initiatives, within a broader context, especially with regard to currencies. If we are trying to ponder the monetary nature of these systems, I think that we have to to really be legitimate, we have to be able to situate them within the context of currencies in general. And then I feel that we have to also situate them in the broader relationship between the economy, society, and ecology. This is something that is sometimes done to a certain extent, but not enough. I'll stop here. Thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts, available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.